Mr. Heron, Reel 3. Now, well, I want to take up the story from when you went to, after you had German measles, you went to Chatham, Chatham Barracks.
That's correct.
What was life like there?
Well, it was very strange, actually, because the barracks was absolutely flooded with people because they were coming in. It was during the big push for more people into the forces, and they were coming in for training and that. Of course, I was already ready for drafting to wherever the...
When would this be?
Oh, this was September. I mean,
and had the war actually started?
Oh, yeah. The war started on the... No, it hadn't. I'm very sorry. Because the war started on the 3rd of September, so I was... No, I was in barracks for some before the war, but I get a little confused here because there was one of my visits to barracks, and I may not have been this particular one. They were dropping, they dropped the first bomb on the British Isles at Chatham. I think it was the first one, but anyway, I got to barracks on this particular time, as you say, before the war. And I was in there very briefly on this occasion. They were worse. But the same story applied. That there was people coming in, of course, to be mobilised. The mobilisation was in full force because they knew the war was coming, even though it was all right on the doorstep, as it were. And so. We arrived in the barracks, a whole bunch of us from Plymouth, and it was absolutely seething with bods everywhere, and they had hammocks slung along the whole length of these vast dormitories with lockers in the centre, and these, I should think you could safely say, I think at least 50 hammocks were slung along each side of these lockers. So there'd be 100 guys stuck in these, with the, underneath was the tables for where you ate. So it was the most economical form of cramming people in you could possibly imagine. In fact, at one time, when there was a bit of a panic on, they sounded an alarm, and nobody knew quite what for. And there was a big rush down the down these aisles, underneath the hammocks, if you please. And people, actually one guy jumped off out of his hammock and landed on my shoulders. And I carried him about 5 yards before collapsing. But it was that sort of strange, and they were practicing bombing procedures for if the aircraft came over bombing, we were supposed to go down to shelters down below and all that. I never did that, but they were particularly keen to get all the Wrens down to the into safety. I don't know if that was the only reason, but certainly they certainly wanted to get the Wrens quietly stowed away down there.
What were you actually doing during the brief period there? Did you have any duties?
Not really. I spent most of my time, because I was always a bit of an exhibitionist, and I think I started doing a bit fooling around and entertaining the troops, as it were.
What sort of thing?
Well, I was doing prison escapes, and maybe things I can't remember exactly, but any sort of comedy acts and things... Because we were entertaining ourselves. I mean, I wasn't the only one. There were people coming in and doing it. It was merely to keep the morale up because we were stuck in that barracks. Some of us who were already in the Navy fully were in a cheek to jowl with hundreds of people who were just entered in. In fact, some of them were still in their civvy clothes. So it's a bit of a pandemonium situation.
Now, you weren't there long, you reckon,
no,
before you got your posting. What was the drafting procedure?
Well, that I can't remember. I think you just got a draft note, as far as I can remember, and you got your rail pass. That was the procedure, I think. You just got a draft chit. Oh, you've got your draft chit, and the, whoever it was in the office there would hand you a draft chit where you were going, what ship you were going to, and at the same time give you the travel pass, which got you on the railways down to, as in this case, Dover, of course. And so that was it. I was on the way, and I arrived on HMS Blanche in Dover on the, I think just before the war started. The dates I can't remember, but it was just before.
August, anyway.
Yeah, it was August. And we got on board, and I think I was only on board for basically about a week.
Now, what type of ship was it? Can you describe the Blanche?
Yeah, sure. There was the B boats, they were called, the Blanche, Boadicea, Boreas, and so on. With the flotilla leader was the Keith.
A destroyer, though?
Destroyers. Complement of about, they were small destroyers, medium-sized destroyers, because, of course, the American destroyers came in and were smaller. But the medium-sized destroyers with a complement of about 120 bods. And they carried 4.7s, guns, a wireless office with which I was more familiar, I think I mentioned before, was just equipped with receivers, transmitters, basically that.
But no radar on this?
Oh, no.
That
was an experimental thing way back in on the Sheffield, yes. No, that was very much in its experimental stage. Actually, the transmitter was a spark transmitter, as I think I previously mentioned. The receiver was quite good. I think they were Marconi at this particular moment in time. I think they were Marconi manufactured. We had code books and cipher books. The cipher books were carried in the wardroom, if I remember rightly, and we carried the code. So the code levels, of course, were not particularly secret. But that was it. So we had a complement of about, I can't remember now, I think we had about six people in the wireless office. When we went to sea, we were doing four on and four off, because it was a very, and that was a pretty tough watch-keeping system, because you hardly ever got any sleep, or adequate sleep, and except when you were in harbour.
Now, what were your first impressions of the, I mean, you weren't with them long, but how did you fit in the crew?
Fine. I can remember there were the wireless staff were a mixture of serving people like myself, ex-reservists who had been called up, who had been sparkers, so were very experienced, and so that. Both of the main body of us, we had one of us in each watch, were very experienced personnel, and so no problem. And we had the rest, it was three and three, if I remember rightly. The three others were new to the game, pretty well trained within a matter of weeks or months for the Morse code, and that's about all they knew. But it worked fairly well. They were virtually being trained by on-the-job training.
Now, where were you when war broke out? Had you started patrolling, or?
Yes. I remember distinctly we were sailing. We were patrolling up and down the channel, and we had the awful experience of hearing the mines knocking against the hull of the ship. As they bounced along the side. Fortunately, of course, the mines in those days were mostly British mines, and well, I say mostly, I don't really know, but the experience that this gave us was obviously caused by British mines, because they were, if they broke away from their cable, which is what happens in those situations, if they break away from their cable, they automatically became safe. But you never really knew.
And this is before the war started, you had that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, because I didn't... I think it was only a matter of days either side. We really were very close. This might have been... we were at sea just before the war, within days of the war. I was at sea for the first time on the Blanche. And we were patrolling for about 3 or 4 days. So we're looking at the... I was at sea probably at the 2nd of September, 1st or 2nd of September, and at sea again throughout the period up until the 6th of September.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? What do you remember of that? How did you react to news of that? And how did you hear about it?
Well, we heard about it over the radio, of course, because it... and, of course, we had ordinary crew... they had crew communication systems which were piped through the ship. And, of course, they heard the various speeches. The normal radio, we heard the normal radio being piped around the ship.
And how did you react?
To be honest, I can't remember how I reacted. I think I was too young. I think we were rather excited, if anything. You know, get at these Jerrys and give them what for. Like, that was the sort of young, the more sober sides of the people on board were a little bit fearful, I think. But I don't think as a youngster I really gave it much thought, other than let's get up and get going, which we were sorry for 3 days later.
Now, anything about the routine of the... I mean, you weren't on it long, but what was it like patrolling? You were in the... Was it in the English Channel you were patrolling?
Yes, in the English Channel.
Between where and where, roughly?
Well, roughly between Portsmouth. No, we wouldn't go far as that. We were going down opposite... is it Cape Finisterre? Between Cape Finisterre and up to the... mouth of the Thames. It was this arc sort of patrolling up and down, as far as I remember. And as to the shipboard, now that came as a bit of a shock to the system.
The what?
The routine on board.
How did it change?
Well, it didn't change. It was just that, of course, this is the first, since this, being on a cruiser, this is the first time I'd been on a canteen messing ship.
Well, tell me about that, then.
And it, well, I mean, I was introduced to the fact that I had to cook, prepare the mess deck's meals.
Is this cook of the mess?
You were cook of the mess for the day. I mean, you didn't do it all the time, but you had your routine to do on that particular day, and that was prepare the meals, take it up to the galley, where it was, you presented it to the cook, and he heated it up or did whatever was required.
And what sort of food would you prepare?
Well, we had pretty good grub, actually, because we, as canteen messing, we had a naffy canteen on board. We went to the naffy and bought ourselves any extras we wanted. There was a canteen, if I remember rightly, there was a small amount of money you could spend. It rather depended on the people on the mess, how good a cook they were, as to how you ate. If they were good cooks on board, we did very well. And we were lucky, I think, that few days, though, we had some good guys.
And how did you manage on your day?
Not very well.
What was the problem?
In fact, I made a rather disastrous start. What happened was, I went up to I went up to fill the canteen with boiling water, but you had to go up to the galley, turn on the tap at the side of the galley. There was constant hot water from the boilers at the back of the galley, and fill up your thing. Well, at that time, the chef, the cook, better, I wouldn't call him a chef, but the cook was frying up a lot of eggs and sausages and that and on the range. And the pan caught fire. And without thinking, he said, "Put some water on that." And of course, I did, and there was one massive explosion, and this guy had a beard. I always remember it. And his face came out of the beard with fringes of burnt hair on his face. It was a bit of a disaster all round, and I wasn't the favourite cook on board, as far as he was concerned, anyway. The rest of the boys had a big laugh about it, of course. But that was I remember that, obviously, it's a thing one remembers. But apart from that, no, I was reasonably happy. There were a good crowd of lads on there. And
anything happen with your duties, in the wireless office? Or was it pretty routine?
Yes, no, well, the initial introduction, you see, again, you were right in the sense that I was on there such a short time that the introduction to the equipment was a hell of a problem. Because we were all, I think apart from one fellow who was already on there, we were all brand new. And it was a bit of a hairy week, because we were only on there basically about a week or 10 days, I can't remember exactly. It was a sort of hairy experience, because we were frantically trying to get everything working according to, fortunately, receivers are never much of a problem, so we could receive the Admiralty broadcasts and such routine stuff. That was all right, it was not a problem. But to transmit, and of course...
Why was that more difficult, was it?
Well, it was, we weren't familiar with the equipment. That was the basic problem. I mean, it was all thrown together at that time. Everything was thrown together in a panic, you know. And we weren't too sure as to our... how we stood as far as transmitting was concerned, because I mean, were you giving away your positions? You know, you had radio silence while you were on patrol, and if I remember rightly, we were all rather, and there was no standing orders, and there was no instructions at that time as to how we should maintain radio silence. So that was a bit hairy.
So you didn't know whether you were meant to be silent or not.
And there were periods when we didn't know. Obviously, in harbour, it didn't matter. But while we were out on patrol, there were the limits of emergencies. What did you do in an emergency if you saw things? I mean, I can't remember, because being below decks in the wireless office, one never really knows what the dickens is going up top unless you get a report down. That was the position. I mean, and it was such a short period. It's difficult to analyse it at all.
So, what's the next thing? Is anything that happened before the time you were actually hit?
No, not really. I mean, it was a fairly, as I said, you got a series of knockings along the hull, which one remembers. But apart from that, I don't think there was anything dramatic. We were just patrolling up and down.
You didn't see anything? You weren't doing anything as a ship? Or would you not know down below?
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know. That's the whole point.
So what happened then? Let's go through when it was sunk.
Right. Well, again, I mean, it was just an average day. Of course, the main thing was you... This was night. Well, it was dusk, if I remember rightly. It was getting very dark, and because of it, they had the dead lights down, so as not to show any light. That was a standard procedure. The dead lights were down on all the ports, so that light didn't show from the ship at all. And we were at the time it happened. I was down the mess deck. About five or six of us were down the mess deck.
You were off duty then?
I was off duty, yeah, off forward. And on the mess deck, there was the hatch to the ammunition locker, strangely enough, was open. And there was a guy down below in the ammunition locker, and there was the officer of the watch, for some reason, I can't remember why, was giving instructions, or they were checking on ammunition down below. And then all of a sudden, of course, this tremendous shake, the way it was a magnetic mine, because that was before degaussing, there was a magnetic mine, blew the stern off.
It hit you in the stern then?
Yeah, well, obviously we'd gone over the top of it, and the magnetic field from the ship was the thing that caused it to blow. It literally, as I said, it blew the stern off. Well,
what was it like? I mean,
that period.
The definition, you know, the explosion.
Well, you didn't hear much, or at least if I remember rightly, but because, I mean, it was a stern, but the whole thing, everything went like crazy, like if you can imagine an earthquake. It just shook the whole ship from stem to stern. Well, what was left of the stern. The next thing that happened, of course, because the deadlights were down, everything was pitch black, couldn't see a thing. And, of course, I think what stirred in all of us was, oh, my God, if we go under, you know, there's going to be a flood, and we're entombed, because there was only one way out, which was the hatch up to the deck above. And somebody struck a match, and we all went for that ladder pell-mell. I might say there wasn't very much bravery attached to it. We were just pushing each other up through the hatch, which was a very small hatch in a destroyer. It's only about a couple of feet wide.
Would it be fair to say, it sounds like it was a touch of panic. Would that
there
be
was, fair? Yes. I think there was a touch of panic. Yeah. I must say, I think, yes, there was a touch of panic. But we heard faint cries from this poor bloke who was down in the ammunition locker. But he was thrown about, apparently, down there, but managed to get up. But he was all right. We all got out. I mean, there was no problem. But at the moment, there was a panic. I think it is this terrible business of feeling entombed. I think that's what causes it. I mean, if you're in the open and got, even as a youngster, when I didn't have many fears or qualms, it was always going to be the next guy that got it. But still, it was panicky. Anyway, we got out on the upper deck. Got through to the upper deck.
Was that just one floor up then?
One deck up. Yeah, it was one deck up.
So you got through the hatch, and that was it. You were on.
Yeah, we were on that. Now, as I got out onto the iron deck, which is the part which is, you know, no superstructure on it. It's the deck running between fore and aft. Virtually, it runs fore and aft. And got out on there, and the instruction we'd been told that the instructions had already been given to abandon ship. The first thing that happened was that we realised that the ship, there was an airlock in the front of the ship. The forecastle was about vertically, almost at 45 degrees at that time. So we were coming out, and the deck was going down underwater below us. And as I came out on the deck, the ship was turning, and I got underneath the funnel and was pushed down, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 feet down, and then struck for the surface and came up round the funnel up to the surface.
So it wasn't a matter of jumping into the water, you were
pushed down.
You were pushed in.
Yeah, well, yes, I was literally, I suppose that's how best to describe it. We were pushed in. Not only I, two or three others that were with me. The next thing that happened is we're swimming around a bit, and we see a Carly float there. We all jump on, or at least there were about four or five of us jumped on the Carly float. And at this point, the forecastle was almost vertical, because the whole time the stern had been sinking down. And fortunately, the airlock was still there. The ship still stayed on the surface. The forecastle was still on the surface. We started to paddle away on the Carly float to get clear of the ship. But for some reason, we didn't move. which was a bit of a frightening experience because we were worried in case we went down with the ship. You know, if the ship had gone, we'd have gone with it. And at that time, somebody was checking around and found that the Carly float was actually attached to a bollard on the ship. So if they'd have gone, they'd have whipped the Carly float out from underneath us and we'd have probably gone down with it. But so then we had to dive off the Carly float and we started to swim.
You couldn't cut it?
Oh, no, it was a wire hawser. Why the hell anybody had put that in, I can't imagine. It was the worst possible thing anybody could have done. It was only a thin wire hawser, but we had nothing to cut it with anyway. And to try and stop, we were more worried to get away from the ship. So we just swam, and eventually, I think it wasn't that long, because we were only 30 miles off Margate, and there was trawlers out from Margate within a pretty short period, I should think, no more than...
What was the water like? I mean, how cold was it?
It wasn't too bad. I mean, it was, for that time of the year, it was sort of, you know, it was cold, but not freezing. Cold. I don't know. It was freezing cold, but not excessively so. I wouldn't like to gauge the temperature, but it was pretty cold.
And what were you wearing?
Well, I kicked my boots off, and I was just wearing in fact, I was all I was wearing was the white top and my bell bottoms. But I kicked the pants and the shoes off actually while I was on first swimming, because it was, you know, that sort of naval uniform, if you got in the water, it felt weighed a ton. So the first thing to do is to get rid of it, which I did. And I was swimming quite well. I had a life jacket on, so I was okay. I mean, there wasn't any danger, but the awful part about it was the diesel fuel on the surface of the water.
What was that like? What affected?
Well, you were swallowing it. It got in your eyes. It stung your eyes. It tasted horrible, of course, and it got all gummed up around your mouth and nose. And it was generally you were black from head to foot almost by the diesel, particularly as the ship had obviously got rid of all its fuel. And during the explosion, that's about it. I think we were.
Had the ship sunk yet, or was this air?
No, actually, the last thing I saw of it was still there. It was still almost vertical. Exactly when it went down, I don't know. I was too busy looking after myself, actually.
Were there many others in the water around you?
Yes, quite a few, quite a lot. Actually, there wasn't a big loss of life. I think I haven't had the exact figures, but I believe it was something like about 20 or so people were killed on the quarter deck and in the stern of the ship.
So mostly by the initial explosion.
Yes, by the initial explosion. That's it. Yes, because. I assume so. And there again, I don't know, because, you know, the whole thing is such a panic station, one doesn't really...
Now, you were just swimming with your life jacket, but yeah. you didn't get to any other Carly float or Cork raft?
Nothing
or
else, no. No, we were picked up by a trawler.
How did you feel when you first saw it? I mean,
oh, brilliant. Well, I've a mixture of brilliant and my God, can I make it that far? Because you're getting pretty exhausted by that time.
Was it dark by then?
Oh, yeah, it was dark.
So it wasn't necessary that the trawler would find you, I suppose?
Oh, well, no, they had lights, or they had the trawler lights scanning the water, so there was a pretty fair chance of being picked up. I didn't notice any particular... Oh God, it's so vague, really. I'm trying to paint the picture, but I do remember that when we got aboard, we were all covered in oil and pretty messy and generally without clothes, without clothes, and they wrapped bunting round us, you know, flags.
How did they actually get you aboard? Because it's quite difficult to get people.
Yeah, no, there were guys on the what they did was they threw the tyres over the side. You know, the old bumper they use for as bolsters? No, not bolsters. You know what I mean. Bumper for going alongside. They used to heave those over on the and that you hold on to while they.